child will notice that just an incredible, something shifts in your heart. It's just amazing what happens. I actually spoke to a guy yesterday who I only actually see on Derby days because he works at Westring High School and I work at Gray. And he's a little girl, he's 15 weeks now. And I always love speaking to new dads, and I say to him, "SP, what does it do to your heart?" Eh? He's like, he doesn't have words. He just, I don't, of children. I'm going to bring that into what I'm speaking about today. And so I don't know why I do this to myself, but I always pick the most tricky subjects to tackle when I'm speaking in front of a church. I don't know why, but I feel like God's giving me a critical mindset, also a skepticism. I don't know why I do this, but I tend to just want to dive into the hardest questions. And it's very scary at the same time, because I just feel like, Lord, I really want you to come through with this. Because what if I don't answer it well? You know, so I almost want to pray this morning that God answers the questions that I'm raising this morning, because I'm going to attempt to. And I don't ever want to come across as if I know everything, because I don't. And if any pastor stands up here, claims to know everything, I think you might be lying. So, and I'm not a pastor, I'm just a teacher, you know. I teach at Gray and I teach English, so I tackle weird concepts in literature all the time. But I tend to pick these ones. And, you know, how many of you have experienced this year that life can be quite brutal? Put your hands up. Life can be brutal. You've experienced some sort of pain in this year, at least. And it's May, you know, it seems quite early, but it's almost middle of the year already, believe it or not. Next year is 2020. Life has many facets that often get thrown our way. You know, I for one don't actually know how I cope sometimes, to be honest. People actually, that's one of the most common questions that Shanae and I get. How do you guys cope? Like, I don't know. I have no idea. Because, you know, Shanae and I, we pastor the worship team at church. We call them the worship family, and we've got a lovely family there of all worshipers. And we pastor that. We have worship practice on a Thursday. We are on eldership here as well. We lead a house church. So eldership meetings happen on a Tuesday, house church on a Wednesday, worship practice on a Thursday. Then I have a derby day at school on a Friday because I'm a teacher. And so I've got sport. I obviously teach. I've got marking. We travel as teachers as well. And at Gray High School, if anyone knows, we travel a lot. We tend to go to Cape Town. We go to Grahamstown, East London, Bloemfontein. We go all over just to get games. And, you know, I'm a father as well. I've got two children. And if anyone knows, it's a lot. Children, whew. And I mean, at the same time, I want to be able to be a good husband. And where do you find the time? And people ask me that all the time. Where do you find the time? You know, I just said, I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm doing it because I feel like this is the place I have to be in. And at the same time, life actually over the last little while, hey, you feel like life has overwhelmed you in some way. You know, I only saw three hands. I think the rest of you are lying. It's a scintilla. I'm joking. Okay, so we're going to, I just feel like, you know, in that space, I think at the end of, well, I'll even tell you this. At the end of term one, I got to a moment where I felt very overwhelmed. And I came to church in the evening. Guys, the evening services, if any of you always skip the evenings, it's an amazing space. Just to let you know, it's an extended time of worship. So you spend a lot more time soaking in God. And what I did was I came up here at the end. I was standing right over there. And I just started weeping because I felt so battered by life. Just battered, man. I was done. Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I so busy all the time? I've got marking all the time, and then I go to sleep. I fall asleep. Oh, if any of you know me well, most of the guys I hang out with aren't actually here today, but I see Gray at the back there. I actually fell asleep at house church once, and I lead it. I was lying in house. I literally fell asleep on the couch. I felt so terrible, but I couldn't help it. I was done. I was done. I couldn't believe that happened to me. And I got up here and I just started crying. I didn't know what was going on. Life was just knocking me left, right, and center. And Dave Pedersen actually came and prayed for me. And the only things that I could hear him say was, God is gentle. So that's it. God is a gentle God. He is a gentle God. He sees you. He knows you. He knows your struggles. He knows where you're at. And God is a gentle God. He is gentle. And he kept saying that. And it just kept, and it just made me cry more. And the more and more he said that, I saw this picture of myself getting totally overwhelmed. Like I can't explain it to you what it was, but it was like this green stuff. And I was reaching out of it. I could just see my head and my arm just kind of like crying and reaching out. And this picture of life just overwhelming me and just feeling so helpless. And it's just a moment of God saying, I've got you. I've got you. I'm gentle. Don't worry. I see where you're at. And, you know, this raises quite a few questions. And before I ask those questions, I'll just bring another story. And a few years ago, I had a conversation with a family member of mine. And his belief in God is actually gone, totally gone. And he used to work in the church. He was actually a youth pastor, and he's got a degree in theology. And now he does not believe in God anymore. And my mind just absolutely blew. I'm like, excuse me, what? I want to understand what goes on in your mind to go from this studying theology and understanding who God is to total disbelief. No ways. I don't believe in him anymore. What happens? God has given me, as some of you probably know, but I'll just tell you anyway, God has given me quite a heart for atheists. I want to understand their mindset. I want to understand why I don't believe. And it's a great thing. I feel like the skeptical mindset is actually a gift. It's a gift to the body of Christ rather than it shouldn't be an attack on it. So, for instance, I've got a scientific mindset. I always want to look at the why. Hold on, why? Don't you tell me that God's good when you see all this other stuff happening. Why? I want to know what's happening. And so I dive into those. And so I'm going to get to that. I went into Africa and he saw this little girl who had malaria. Not one person was helping her, and she was lying on the side of the road, withering away. Didn't know what to do. And he said to himself, how on earth can this exist? This picture right here, how can this exist if there's a good God? How? And that was the picture that he said. That's literally it. Boom, right there. And he just totally discarded his whole belief system. It can't be real. No ways. And he said to me, this is why. And now he uses the analogy that I love to use. And this floored me because it started a journey of me actually diving into this. And he said, I'm a dad. That's what he said to me. He says, I'm a dad and I've got a little girl. I would never allow her to suffer like that little girl suffered. I would never allow that. So how can God allow us to suffer like that and just be okay with it? That's what he said to me. And I'm standing there and I'm just going, I don't know. I don't know. God's good though. You know, and that's all we have sometimes. You know, don't worry, God's loving. God's good, God's loving. And it started a journey of me really wrestling with God and this idea of why we suffer. And I know that a lot of it's been happening this last week. Dave spoke on it. Last week we had Voter speaking on Job. And I felt like God said to me, Matt, I want you to talk on that today. I want you to dive into that question of what is your journey been on understanding this thing called suffering from an atheistic point of view, from a skeptical mindset, from a scientific mindset, because those are the questions that we get thrown as Christians, isn't it? And all of us, I can probably guarantee right now, quite a few of you, and I'm not going to try and put a percentage on it, but quite a few of you would not know how to answer that person. We don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. That's what we want to do. You know, we want to show the kindness of God. And that's exactly what we need to do. It's fair. It's good. And that's probably the best thing you can do, because we're never going to argue anyone into heaven. The only way that we're going to get people into heaven is experience. Experience his love. Experience his presence. That's it. So bring them. But the thing is, we have to get them here first. And sometimes answering a question might help that step. Yeah? So it was a tough one. It was a really tough one. So my first point, I've got two major points this morning. My first point is this: the limits of our human knowledge will actually hinder us in understanding suffering. Okay, we're not going to understand it fully. We're not going to do it because we're limited. Because if we can understand everything, then what's the point of there being a God? Are we just going to box him into our conceptual understanding? Are we going to do that all the time? And so what we are doing here is one of the assumptions that's smuggled into the thought that suffering disproves the existence of God is this. If God has good reasons for allowing suffering, then we should know what those reasons are. What are those reasons, Lord? And that's what we do. We demand them from him. Come on, tell us. You know, we get into this moment of just going, God, I don't understand the reason why you're letting me suffer. And guys, remember, suffering, some of you put your hands up now. How many of you experienced that life is brutal this year and you put your hands up? Suffering has extended, like, it's little suffering, you know, and you get bigger and lots of people struggle. I mean, we've got people in this church that are struggling with huge, huge things. You know, Dave and Maria with Duncan, it's massive, you know, it's massive stuff. Why? Why? And so we want to understand this. So the thing is, why do we think that? Why do we think that we need to know everything? What's the point of us knowing everything? Because, and this is something that's very difficult for me, just by the way, because I want to know everything. I want to know, Lord. The scientific mindset does that, okay? The skeptical mindset does that. We want to know. We want to prove that this is why it is. You know, so that's one thing that they do. So here's a nice parent. This is what I love to do, the parents thing. So if I decide, my wife and I decide, we're going to move. We're going to leave Port Elizabeth and we're going to go and live in Bloemfontein. God forbid, please, Lord. No. We're going to go live in Bloemfontein. And let's say my kids are a little bit older and they understand what's happening. They might hate us. They might hate us. Why are you doing this, Dad? We have to go. We have to go to, are you telling me that we have to leave where our family is and we have to go there? But for me, as a parent, the first thing that I'm doing is I'm seeing that God is moving us for favor. He's probably moving me for because I'm getting a better opportunity. My wife and I would never ever do this if we didn't think it was going to be a good thing. Does that make sense? So the kids aren't old enough to understand fully why we are doing what we are doing. And they're probably going to hate us for it. And only one day, when they become of age and their brains start to understand, when their cognitive development starts to happen, and they start going, I see it now. I understand. You actually loved me for moving me because nothing was happening here. I get it, Dad. Does that make sense to you guys? So, and maybe it may be experienced by the child as the absolute worst suffering that could ever occur. In that moment, the child might be certain that all happiness is behind him and that his parents hate him and that the practical purposes of his life is possibly over. And yet, even in such outrage on the part of a child does not mean that the child's parents are wrong to make that move. It does not mean that they do not love him. In fact, it's very likely that it will precisely a good thing for their children that weighed heavily on the parents' decision. Because I'm not going to make a decision, I'm telling you now, as a father, as the head of the home, I'm not going to make a decision that is selfish. I'm going to make a decision that's probably going to be good for my wife and my kids. I have them in my mind when I make decisions, yeah? So I'm not going to do that if it's going to be of detriment to my kids. And so they don't realize that once. They don't realize that at that moment. And so sometimes, if parents' reasons are sometimes beyond what a child can fully grasp, then we should be surprised when sometimes God's reasons are beyond what we can fully grasp. Does that make sense? And sometimes we can't. And guys, I'm just saying, this word yield. You guys know that word yield. I mean, lots of people don't understand the yield sign in the road, eh? You know, they see yield and they stop. I'm like, but it's a yield. Never mind. And then I go, then he goes, come on. What's going on here? The yield sign means yield, go. No one's there, so I'm going. Yield. And some people just go, hey, bud, there was a yield sign. What does yield actually mean? What's the definition of yield? It means to wait to see if anything else, in the road at least, to see if anything else is coming, because then I'm going to yield for them to go first, then I go. You know, the circle, no one knows how circles work, okay? Yield to the right. And then everyone on the right just goes, there's a yield sign at yours as well. I was here first. Yeti. I get irritated with the circles. People don't know how to use those things, okay? But this idea of yielding to what God has is difficult for me. It's very difficult because I want to understand. I want to understand. I want to understand why, Lord. And sometimes I'm not going to understand, so I have to yield that He, and I have to, in faith, I have to yield to Him. In faith, I'm going to be like, God, you know best. So I don't understand fully what's happening right now, but I trust that you know, and so therefore I put my belief and my faith in you. Yeah? That yielding thing is so powerful. It's so powerful because we have to put faith in Him that He knows what He's doing. And ultimately, we're singing songs, "You are good." So if He is good in nature, we have to yield to Him. So this idea of suffering immediately is flawed because God's picture is bigger than what we can comprehend. Isaiah 55, please, Cassandra. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declared the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." He literally says that. In the Bible, He says to you, "You're not going to understand what I'm doing, but it's okay." Finn does Future Kings. Yeah, you guys know Future Kings, a little rugby program that they do through school. I mean, 3-year-olds running around a rugby field is fantastic to watch. I just want to let you know. He literally ran in a circle. It was fantastic. It was brilliant. Like the try lines over there, my boy. They've got this little shirt. I can't actually remember what the verse was now, but on the back of the shirt it says, "For you don't know what I'm doing now, but one day you'll understand." And it's funny for the kids, hey? You're like, you don't know what we're doing by imparting it to you, and you don't know what the hell you're doing either, but I can see that. But one day you're going to understand it. Okay, one day you're going to understand it. Think about that in the concept of our life. We don't know what God is doing now, but one day we're going to get it. One day we're going to get it. We only know in part. If God, as great as Christians, if God is as great as Christians claim He is, then sometimes not fully grasping the fullness of His reasons is exactly what we should expect. And if it's exactly what we should expect to find, if God does exist, then our finding it can be strong evidence that God does not exist. So the whole point is that it's actually flawed in essence. You can't think that because suffering exists, God is not present or God doesn't exist. The whole argument is actually flawed. And I'm just going to say this. You guys, I don't know, I've said this again a lot, but I dive into C.S. Lewis and Ravi Zacharias a lot because Ravi Zacharias, he's a Christian apologeticist. I don't know how to say it. Apologeticist, I think it is. His whole job is to the defense of the Christian faith. And he goes around doing lectures around the world and they ask him these type of questions and he answers them because he knows stuff. It's amazing. And what he said is this. Evil is present because one guy asked him, how can you say that God exists if there's so much evil in this world? Therefore, God doesn't exist because He wouldn't allow evil to be around. So he's like, okay. So you say evil exists. And the guy's like, yeah, of course it does. Look, stuff happening. So he goes, okay, so evil is present. So he says, yeah. So he said, well, then good has to be present. Am I correct? Because you can't have evil without a differentiating between good and evil. Otherwise, what is it called? So he goes, yeah, I suppose so. That's good then. So he says, okay, so there must be morality as well then, because the morality is the line that differentiates between good and evil. Right? So he struggled with that one a little and he's like, yeah, I suppose then there must be some sort of differentiation between good and evil if there is good and evil, because he just said that. So he was like, okay, cool. Then you're actually assuming that there must be a moral code giver. So in essence, your whole question is flawed. The whole purpose of you asking the question, why is evil present, then there must be no God, flaws the idea. If I've just gone through that with you, you just said there must be a moral giver, so therefore evil, can you see what you've done? Your whole question shouldn't actually exist. It self-destructs. Evil is present, therefore good is present. If good is present, there must be a moral code because we have to differentiate. There must be a moral code giver. Morality, just so you guys know, science has proven this as well. Morality is not a product of evolution. It cannot be because you see other elements of the world that do what we consider wrong things without feeling anything. That's what morality is. Morality is knowing the difference between right and wrong. Yeah? So if we can conceptualize that, if we can understand that, then you have to understand there must be a creator who had put that there. If the creator put that there, then we just have to go straight to the beginning. Just because evil exists, that means there is a God, not that there's no God. So his whole, and then he didn't know what to say. So he says, well, then what am I actually asking you then? That's what he said. So what am I actually asking you? And he says, I know what you're asking me, but that's not the essence of what we're talking about here. He was talking about suffering and understanding suffering. So does that make sense to you guys? The fact that we immediately start trying to understand God, and when we try and understand him, we're boxing him in. We're saying, God, we can understand you fully. And if that's actually pride. Our pride gets in the way of understanding suffering. We think that we should understand it fully. Therefore, if we don't, we're going to run away from God. And now that idea of running away from God, I just want to say this, you know, the student, you guys are writing exams soon, the students, you know, and there's the student who actually pushes in to that difficult question and gets an answer is way more beneficial in a beneficial space than the person who sees a question and decides to skip it and think that they're clever for skipping it because they had more time in the exam. Do you guys understand what I just said? The person who pushes in to that question and gets an answer and spends time on it is the person who's actually in a way more beneficial space than the person who left it out because they think they didn't have to do it because it's too difficult. That right there is exactly the idea of suffering. Because we don't understand it, all of us go, oh, God, he put suffering in our lives, and therefore we just go, oh, he must be evil, he must be a psychopath. That's what I've heard people say. He must be this crazy God. And so therefore, and some of us even do this as well, we turn from God because we are hurting. We blame him for it instead of pushing into him, because at the end of the pushing in, you're going to be more beneficial on the other side. And the same thing goes with the relationship. And you guys know that God favors relationship. And in relationship, I mean, I remember this very clearly. Shanae and I were dating at the time, and I remember very clearly in St. Francis, we were walking up the road to the shop, and I said to her, you know, Shanae, I'm really, really thankful for how we can really resolve issues. Because we would, I say this a lot, but during engagement was not our best time. I didn't know, but engagement for us was not fun. There were lots of issues came up and fighting and stuff. And the thing is, in that, I was so thankful that we could work it out, because at the end, you feel closer. At the end, you feel stronger because you pushed in and you resolved it. I'm getting at you. Because the second point of what I'm coming at today is our response of what freedom actually is. What does freedom look like? And a lot of people complain, in a sense, and then this little girl that's lying there with malaria, no one's helping her, and we're complaining about this instead of going, well, you here to help her. Maybe God put you there to help this girl. Maybe you need to push into this moment and cry and just own it and say, God, I need you, because what suffering does is it pushes us towards him. It's not supposed to turn you away from him. As soon as it turns you away from him, you are actually responding in the opposite way that God intended for you to respond. And your response is supposed to be, God, I need you. And he says, I've been carrying you this whole time, you didn't even know it. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, right? I mean, it's hectic to realize that suffering is not supposed to be, and this is the thing, the devil is at work in us, eh? He wants you to not understand it so that you can't see it. He wants you to turn away from him. He wants you to turn away from God. He wants you to be confused by it. He wants you to feel like that so that you can go, ah, it's his fault. It's his fault. It's his fault. He's the one who did this. Yes, God's got all the power. Yes, he's got all the stuff, but it's not his fault. We live in a fallen world, and that's what I'm going to get into now. So what kind of world God would have made depends on what God values, correct? If I value something and I'm a creator of something, I'm gonna create something that I value. I'm not gonna create something that has no value to me. That makes no sense, perfectly. So God's gonna create a world about something that he values. And what does he value? He values relationship. He wants to have relationship with you. The whole idea of the Trinity is a relationship. Okay? So according to Christianity, as what we believe, what God values above all is relationship. But for relationship to be meaningful, it must be freely chosen. And for relationship to be freely chosen, there must be the possibility of it being rejected. Agreed? For it to be chosen, it has to be able to be rejected. And wherever there is a possibility of rejecting a relationship, there is also the possibility of pain and suffering. Because as soon as you reject, you probably, and that's a choice, this is a choice-based suffering I'm talking about now, okay? And because sometimes, and I don't know about you guys, but I actually had this incredible moment this morning with God, and I just said, you know, I actually had tears in my eyes sitting there praying this morning saying, Lord, this is the sweetest place. Being in your presence is the sweetest place. And I prayed when I walked out my house this morning as well. I said, God, I want to just repent right now of being a Sunday Christian sometimes because I'm so overwhelmed by life. It's so difficult sometimes to recognize God in those places. And in that, you realize how good it is to be in his presence. And you're like, oh, look what I've missed. Come on. This is what I should be inviting him into these spaces. Yeah? So I'm going to say that again. Okay? For relationship to be meaningful, it must be chosen. For relationship to be chosen, there must be a possibility of it to be rejected. And wherever there is a possibility of rejecting relationship, there must be the possibility of pain and suffering. It must be. And so the Bible affirms this truth in the very first pages in Genesis. We find a story of, obviously, an intimate relationship of people and God, don't we? Okay? And this intimate God, and God, it says, we find a story of people who are intimate relationship with God and who know what he asked of them. He said, Genesis 3 verse 1, he said, you must not, look what it says there, Genesis 3 verse 1. There we go. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals in the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, did God really say, you must not eat of the tree of the garden? And he asked the question and he put doubt in their minds. As soon as you put doubt in the person's mind, they start to question if God's intentions are actually good. Okay? And so they begin to doubt God. And when they begin to doubt God, he knows actually what's best for them, but they doubt that, okay? And they begin to doubt what he has for them. Ultimately, they begin to doubt what he actually said, and then they sin. It's not a big sin, but the point is that they just ate a piece of fruit. No big deal. And then it starts down a path, doesn't it? Starts them down a path. After they take the fruit, what happens? First they're told, then they feel shameful. After they feel shameful, they were convinced that God wouldn't want anything to do with them anymore. In that moment, I don't believe he wants to do anything. Not questioning, not saying, God, I'm sorry about this. Let me chat, have a nice chat to you, because that's kind of God he is, the relationship God. Not one of those moments. It's just like, I assume that God doesn't want anything to do with me because I did something wrong. And then they just start walking this way instead of, okay? So as soon as that progressive action starts happening, and then they begin accusing one another, don't they? Adam pointed at Eve and said, she did it. Was her fault? And then Adam's like, was it the snake? Yeah? Now we have blame shifting. You know? Little sin, shamefulness, God doesn't want anything to do with this, blame shifting. Now look at the pit that you've just created. You've put yourself in. God hasn't even done anything yet. You haven't even chatted to the oak. And he's sitting there going, what on earth are you doing to yourself? What on earth are you doing to yourself? And Eve pointed at the serpent, and then from temptation to doubt to disobedience to shame to hiding to finger pointing, then to suffering. Why? Because they're suffering now in the space. They get thrown out. Is there really a question? Is there really a question about whether the story speaks of the truth about the human heart? There's the most amazing part of the full story, though. The first persons have rejected God, and then they've decided that they'd rather be their own gods. And how does God respond? Here comes that moment that I said, I'm standing here and I'm feeling battered by life. Maybe half of it's my own doing. But I'm standing here and I'm feeling battered by life. Life is throwing lemons at me and I can't make lemonade because I can't catch all the lemons that's throwing at me. Okay? So now we feel bogged down and us crying, and Dave says, God is gentle. God is gentle. God is gentle. Best part of the full story. Genesis 3 verse 9. As God comes into the garden, he says, where are you? Where are you? He doesn't respond in, why have you done this? What are you doing to yourself? As I was saying, he didn't do that. Where are you? I want to know where you are. Then after their first interaction with God and they have sinned, Adam names his wife. Do you guys know what Eve actually means? How many of you know what Eve means? Yeah, I saw two hands. Two hands, great. You guys get A+. Eve is a name of great honor, and it means breath or life. And you guys know that the word Yahweh is also interpreted as a breath. It's not supposed to have the A and the E in it, if you guys know. It's supposed to be YHWH. It's supposed to be, you can't even pronounce it in the English language. It's like Yahweh. I don't even know how to say it. It's like breath, living, breathing life. Eve means life, breath. In the same time, because, yeah, it says in Genesis 3 verse 20, because she would become the mother of all living. Now, symbolically, it connects her with God breathing of life into Adam, and after the spellings of the names of Eve and Yahweh show similarities in the original Hebrew. They have the same ending. In English, it would be the same as if a girl had a name Hannah and her mother's name is Joanna. Okay? It's like that similar, Eve and Yahweh, all right? And so this is probably not the name Eve expected to be called after the fall of humanity. Think about it. But look at the grace that God gives despite our own actions, despite our suffering, despite the things. God says, I know where you are. I can see where you are. I am gentle. I love you. It's okay. It's okay. Even then, in the moment of great sin, she gets the honor of a name that symbolically connects her with God himself, even amidst the consequences of the fall. How generous and loving must God's interaction with them have been for Adam to choose such a name for his wife? Hey, I can't actually deal with how incredible that is. And the same thing goes with if my kid falls and cuts his knee open, okay? He falls over. I mean, the other day, Finn ran and he was going to his cousin's party and he stubbed his toe. He's so excited to see his cousin. He stubs his toe. First moment of the party and he's in tears. I wasn't there, Shanae was there, she told me about it, and I'm like, oh, that sucks. And he's so excited, and I used to start the whole party with this pain. The same thing he had fun, but the point is that moment right there, if my kid falls and hurts himself, my first reaction is not, why were you doing that? Come over here, why were you doing that? And you know, I don't do that. I go, it's okay, my boy, and I hold him tight, and I stroke his back, and I say, it's okay, daddy's here. Daddy is here. And then afterwards, I teach him, listen, this and this, you probably shouldn't be standing there because you're going to fall. Because if I make him feel terrible in that moment, immediately his experience of my love is warped because he's in pain. I need to embrace him first and make him feel my love. And through that, I can teach him something. Yeah? I use the pain to teach him something. There's something so intimate about dressing my children as well. Hey, I don't know. It looks frantic. Let's be honest. So the first, I remember when Finn was getting to the coming of age where Ezra's kind of there now, where they just start becoming like mountain lions when you're trying to dress them. It's like, I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out. Trying to put their pants on and he's rolling over. And I'm like, just sit still. Okay, but at the same, in the first time of this little, very dependent baby just lying there and my dressing him, it was such a nice moment, pulling his arm through, you know, and just like, oh, and he's giving me a smile, yo, too. It's such a great little moment here. The same thing happens in the Garden of Eden. What does God do? Next, we're told that God made garments of skin for Adam and Eve. In an ancient Near Eastern culture, this is the exact opposite of what should have happened. Shouldn't have happened. Why? Because they're supposed to be disgraceful. Their clothes should have been torn to symbolize their disgrace. Instead, God makes new garments for them. And not only that, but the text gives us beautiful detail. And it says there, he clothed them. He actually clothed them. And imagine the intimacy of God pulling a t-shirt over your head and you just have that little moment of connection, hey? It's so rad. It's incredible. and guiding your arm through the sleeves, as I said, you know, kneeling down, possibly tying your shoelaces, and you're just like, oh man, this is cool. This is the God that we serve, guys. This is the God that we serve. He wants those connections with us. Through suffering, it shouldn't be pushing us away from those moments if that is the moment that he actually wants from you. I'm not gonna hurt myself if my kid hurts himself and then he goes, you caused it, and he runs away from me. I'm gonna be like, okay, he'll probably understand just now. It's okay. And then he'll come back. Sorry, Dad, you didn't cause it. I apologize. And my kid can't say apologize yet, but whatever. But you get the idea. Just because he hurt himself doesn't mean that I caused it. No, Dad, you bought this house. You put that chair there, and I fell off the chair and hit my head over there. And so therefore, you're the one who caused all of this. And he walks away. I am going to be totally flabbergasted by that moment. Are you kidding me? Just because God created this world and put things in there doesn't mean that he's the one that causes all the suffering that's in the world. In Job, he's the one who said to Satan, go ahead and touch him, because I want to see how faithful Job is, not to push Job away. God gives Satan the moment to create suffering for us so that we can say, Lord, you are still good in this. You are still good. There is pain in the night, but joy comes in the morning, Psalm 30 says. Yeah? Joy comes in the morning. After the pushing through, do we see God actually reveal himself and we feel more connected, we feel stronger, we feel built up, we feel amazing. Why? Because look at what I've been through. Look at what I've been through, and I'm stronger now. That's why suffering exists. So try and imagine subtracting all suffering from a person's life. Try subtracting it quickly. Think about your life. Subtract all suffering that you've endured. Maybe the suffering that shaped the culture of your family that they were born into, the suffering that formed your character, the suffering that you fought against, the suffering that carried others through something. What happened to the life that you were picturing? What happened to that life? Immediately, it doesn't look the same, does it? Because we incline to celebrate what we come through, because the joy is after the pain. Without the possibility of significant suffering, practically every great true story in history is going to be false. No one would ever have made a significant sacrifice for anyone. No great moments of forgiveness or reconciliation. No opportunities to stand for justice against injustice. Why? Because no injustice. No suffering. No compassion. Nothing to be compassionate about. No courage. There's no dangerous situations then. So if you are the people that always ask God, why did you cause this? Or why does this exist? Lord, why is this here? I do not feel like this is for me. This is not what, that's great. God is for all of the things that are good for him, but he makes all things work together for our good as well. And so we can't be sitting there and questioning why. We should be saying, Lord, help me through. Lord, help me through, because I know that you are good, and I can't see it now, Lord. But I know that there must be something good on the other side of this. There must be something good. Imagine you guys know that we are only in the beginnings of what we call life, eh? You know, we are in the beginnings. This earth, we're only going to live here for 80 years, and God says we're going to live eternally in him forever. So if you had to try and measure this life in eternity, what is it going to look like? I mean, you probably wouldn't be able to put a dot on the map that will actually measure the life that we are living right now. And so let's put that into an analogy quickly and say, let's say aliens had to come here and look at the first moments of your life. How whack would that look? So let's say they managed to go onto YouTube and tap into a video of what your life looked like just how it started. And this is probably what it looked like. So all they could see was the hospital and the delivery room, eh? Sorry for the graphic imagery that I'm just about to share about you being born. And they watched as the doctors forcefully told your mom to do things that made her scream in pain. Yeah? And then And then she could take no more, so the doctors got out a knife, and then they just cut her open, and they took the baby out, they took you out. Blood everywhere, crazy. You're just like, what the heck is going on here? And then, though my mom was reaching for me and screaming, she's like, I want my baby. The doctors run away with you. And they rush away, and they go and put you in some little box over there. And the alien's probably looking at this going, this is savage. This is savage. What on earth is going on here? And then they stop the video and they go, humans don't understand them. And they walk away. Now, if that is all that you see, if you are only going to see the beginnings, if the aliens were only supposed to see the first few moments of my life, they would think that the doctors were evil. They would think the doctors were evil. And only from a fuller perspective of to see it, like fully what the doctors were actually doing, they would notice that the doctors cared for your mother. They would notice that, hello my boy. They would notice the doctors cared for your mother, hey? They would notice that in actual fact, the doctor saved your life, didn't they? If your mom screamed in pain and then they couldn't take it anymore, sorry, my boy, I'll get to you now, okay? And they cut you open, that means that it's emergency Caesar and the doctors actually saved your life in that moment because only in a fuller perspective will they understand that. And a Christian understanding of reality, what we do is we sometimes only view what life is supposed to be like because of the first moments of what eternity is supposed to look like. In this only, and here's that we are going to experience such things. Because when we get to heaven, there is going to be no pain. There is going to be no suffering. There is going to be no sin. There is going to be no this. So what do we have to overcome to make us actually draw closer to God in those moments? Because God is going to be fully available in every aspect of what it means. So our understanding right now has to shift. And the shift is this. We need to be thankful. How difficult is that? We need to be thankful for our suffering. As Dave shared 2 weeks ago, there was a guy that said that he broke his leg or something. I don't know how it works. I speak under correction now. And he said, they were going to pray for him to be healed. Was the legs off? That was work. The legs were off. There we go. And he said, no, I don't want it because if I didn't have this here, I wouldn't have come close to God. So I don't want to be prayed to be healed. This is the best place I can be because I experienced Jesus here. It's like, wow. This is amazing. So we literally are just in the birthing process of all human history. We are in the birthing process now, and that's what it looks like. It looks savage sometimes. It looks savage. But in eternity, wow, we're going to get a fuller perspective of what we actually went through and how that brought us close to who the one and only God is and who what he actually intended you to do, and that's push in. Because when you push in, you'll be stronger on the other side. Push into me. Look at him. He's actually standing there going, I know what you're going through, but I'm standing here with my arms open. Come and hug me. Come and hug me in this. Life is only the smallest fraction of our actual lives. We are going to live forever. And even though right now we're living in a harsh, broken world, Jesus promises that one day, everyone who calls on him will be in a world that will be good to us. I won't go through all the verses there, but it literally says there, we will live in a world that will be good to us in Romans 10:13, Acts 2:21, in Joel 2:32 as well. It literally says those things. It says that the world is going to be a good to us afterwards. Just to end off with this. In John 16:12, it says, yeah, Jesus says, I have much more to say to you, more than you now can bear. And in another version, it literally says stuff that, it says, I want to say so many more things to you right now, but you can't understand them all. I have so much in life that I want to share with you, but you can't actually carry it yet. So just be. And the thing is, I heard Bill Johnson say once, he said, there are things that have never, ever been seen before. And this is something that I love taking to my worship team, saying, guys, there is concepts of God that we've never experienced before. Never, ever. The human history has never experienced those things in God, ever. So why are we trying to understand the fullness now? What's the point? And in the same time, it should create an excitement in us to actually say, Lord, let's move on in our lives so we can experience those things. I want to experience those things. There are realms of God that he longs to reveal to us. And later on in that chapter, he says there, John 16 verse, I think it was 33, I think. Says, I've told you these things so that in me you may take heart, for I have overcome this world. And that is exactly what I want to end on tonight. Well, tonight, this morning, check me. I want to end on the fact that, you know what? We need to take heart. We need to take heart. As a church, as a people, as an individual, help each other through stuff. Be with each other. Love each other. Be kind to each other in these things, because suffering is not supposed to be, it's not meant to be done alone. Relationship is what he values. So suffer in relationship. Share with the people that are close to you. Why? Because they can help you through it. That is Jesus. That is Jesus right there. And you have to know that you put hope in him and you realize, take heart. Why? He has overcome this. Jesus endured the biggest suffering that he could, that any of us could ever endure in life. And he did it, why? So that you can live one day anyway. So the little suffering that you're enduring now, and believe me when I say it, in eternity it's going to look little. Take heart. Because God's overcome the world already. It's done. It's dusted. Let's walk through it. Why? You're going to be stronger. And stand with me. There are so many of you right now that I'm sure are standing there going, Lord, I am sorry for seeing this in the wrong way, probably. I also feel like there's some of us standing here going, wow, God, I really want to feel the joy in the morning, because what I'm going through right now is not cool. What I'm going through right now is not cool. I feel like God is saying to us this morning, he wants us to shift our perspective about how gentle he actually is in moments that seem so brutal. Life is brutal, but God is gentle. God, in essence, wants you to push in to him when you are feeling helpless. He is the one that actually can carry you through everything. The people around you are the people, if they don't know what you're going through, they can't help you through it, hey? Remember that as well. And sometimes we just need a little bit of an embrace from a person next to us to get through the stuff. So Father God, I just pray right now, Jesus, I pray that you will come and reveal your incredible gentleness right now. Your incredible gentleness. I feel like some of you might need to hear this. So just as we're praying, I just stand in a place of acceptance, because I feel like God wants to say a couple of words to you. You can just put your hands in front of you and close your eyes if you feel like you want to be in that space. But God is saying to you, he wants the same words that Dave said to me about what God was saying. He just wants you to know. He says to you, now, I am gentle in your space. I am generous. I am good. I am ultimately all good. And what I want to show you is good. What you're going through might not seem good. It might not seem good at all. And you're probably hurting right now. And God just whispers in your ear. He's saying, it's okay. Daddy's here. Daddy's here. Come and run into his arms, because he's there for you. He's there for you. He knows what you're going through. He knows the pain. He's been there. He was hanging on the cross. He knows what suffering feels like. He knows it. And he says to you, Daddy's here. I am gentle. I am gentle. Thank you. If there are any of you, I feel like there's some people who might want to respond to that in a little bit more of a bold way, and that's okay. If you don't feel like you want to, that's fine. But there are a few of us up here that would love to pray for you, and I'm sure some people around you would love to pray for you as well. So I'm just going to keep that moment. If you guys can just, let's just hold this moment for a little bit. I feel like God wants to do something really deep here. Don't discard that feeling now because we're starting to talk about coming forward, okay? I don't want just to switch off because we know, don't think about after church now, just think about the moment of God. God wants to meet you there. He wants to meet you there. And so if you want to respond in a more bold way by coming forward, please do. Please do. Come and walk forward here. And then that's you saying, I'm in a space that I need help. There's some of us here who've lost someone recently, a close member of your family. I'm actually feeling quite emotional right now. I can feel your tears. I can feel it. It's not a good place. You're feeling like it was a close person. You've lost them recently. Feel like you, if anyone, you can just put your hand up. Anybody? We want to pray for that person. Ends up being my auntie. Please come forward. We just want to get some people. Guys, these people in front here, I feel like there are more of us that want to come because what need hugs. These people need hugs. God wants to show how much He loves you by releasing that just that normal hug. I feel like these people need hugs, so feel free to do that. Just hug the people, make them feel like they're loved. Make them feel like they're loved. If there's anyone who feels like they need that this morning as well, I just feel like you just come forward. God wants to really give you some words, but not only the words, I feel like He just wants you to feel loved.